football on off the ball.
So that's also not healthy. It's great for the Premier League, but it's probably bad for the rest of the world.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Settle in on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 0.0.
Now you're very welcome to another episode of Settle In with Guinness 0.0. I am delighted to say that today I am joined by 3-time Olympian, 2-time world and European champion, Sunita Plus4. Sunita, thank you very much for coming into studio today. You were saying you're just about to head off to London with a group of women that you're coaching. First time that they've headed abroad for a trip, so it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, it is. They're quite a handful, so I hope that they're behaving at the moment. Some of them already there, some of them are just making their way out. So I hope no parties until we start racing.
How long have you been working with the group and coaching in general?
I only started in September. So once I finished my own rowing career, I kind of wanted to stay in touch, obviously. And I think it was my saving grace, because retirement is not easy from the sport that you've known for so many years. And yeah, I think they'd be my kind of lifeline in a way to stay, keep in touch with sport and have a group of girls to try to improve technique and just stay in rowing, really, in general.
Because you do hear from a lot of elite athletes the difficulty that they find of making that transition from being an athlete, and that's all you focus on, to what comes next. And some people are really good at planning ahead when it comes to that, and maybe setting up businesses or, you know, developing themselves, and then other people aren't in that sort of headspace.
Yeah. See, I was so eager to go working, and luckily enough, I started working end of October, so kind of launched into it, not looking back. So it was good, but at the same time, it doesn't really help, because you still keep going back to the life you had. It is a massive transition. You don't realize it until it actually hits you. I think you can prepare all you want, but you will still have all the feelings and all the emotions going through yourself to deal with it. Yeah.
And what has it been about? Like, did you find it difficult kind of watching them out on the water and knowing that that wasn't you anymore? Or was it just the relief of actually having something to do and staying in touch with the sport that kind of mattered more?
I think because my last year was very disappointing in career for a good few reasons, I think seeing a positive side to sports still in a club environment was very good for me. Like seeing that joy, knowing that I'm there because I want to be there, not because I have to, and also that those girls that are there training and showing up, some of them made comeback after, let's say, leaving a junior level, and now they're coming back and you see them improving, and it gives me joy, it gives them joy, and hopefully they stick around for another couple of years so we can keep building on a project. But yeah, I think it's just seeing that there's still a good side to the sport, not just high performance.
Yeah. So let's go back to the very start about your own journey. Obviously, born in Latvia, and that's where you started rowing. What was it that first kind of attracted you to the sport? Is it you just picked it up and then suddenly realized, oh, I'm kind of good at this. I can make something of this.
I kind of signed up because I was tall and then all my friends got picked. So I was like, okay, I'll tag along. So I had no clue what I'm signing up for, if I'm honest. I thought the single's going to be a kayak, but I'd never seen a boat before. But since we started training, it kind of, I don't know, they do say about rowing, like once it ropes you in, it never lets you go. And it kind of is true. Like, I can even see that with some master rowers that had started in mid, let's say in their mid-40s or something. They're there for life now. It's hard to leave. I don't know what it is about the sport. It's hard, it's rewarding, it teaches you a lot of things about yourself, a lot of things about discipline as well, and commitment and dedication and all that. Yeah, I don't know. It's just.
And what was the culture like around rowing in Latvia at the time? Because even when you started over here in Ireland, you were a trailblazer compared to where the country is now at rowing and how much more of an established sport. But what was it like in Latvia at that time?
It's still quite similar, unfortunately. I think the lack of funding over there kind of keeps the sport on the back foot. So they don't really have the same opportunities as I had here when I returned to the sport to develop. And because unfortunately, a lot of it is without funding. It's availability of a good equipment and opportunities to go traveling to the warm weather camps and all that. They don't really get that. But when I started, oh God, we had the best time. Like, I went to sports boarding school as well. It was state funded, so it wasn't like posh or anything. We got our four meals that were like bare basics and stuff, but I don't know, we loved it. We lived there, we trained together, we went to school together. It was great fun.
And it didn't find that overwhelming at any stage, in that your life was completely surrounded by the sport, in that you were living and breathing it in a way with lots of other people around you who were doing the same thing? Or was it just at that stage where you're like, this is just fun and it's class that I get to experience this?
Yeah, it was fun, and we, like, during the summers, it was the best life. You don't have school, you live in a dorms, like, you are being fed. You have to go train twice a day, but then in the middle of the day, you can go to the beach because it was like only 5 minutes away. You can go play beach volleyball in the evening. You can go swimming. It was amazing. Like, I don't remember it being as hard at all. Yeah, there were hard sessions and stuff, but I suppose I was competitive. I wanted to do better, so it didn't seem like it was too much.
Mm.
All my friends were rowers, so it was like we were all in that together. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, as time went on, I assume it got a little bit more difficult when you weren't at that school age where you need to balance life and jobs and work. How did you find that transition?
I did try for a while to combine school, college and training, and then I kind of dropped out of college a little bit because I prioritized rowing, and then I started working. At one point, I did two jobs and rowing at the same time, so that was a bit much. Yeah, but eventually you just see the last, I think, successful championships for me was university championships 2004. And then after that, I didn't really see where I can progress from there. Like, I was faster maybe in Latvia, but then on a world stage, I wasn't fast enough to progress. So I kind of thought, like, that's it. Like, I've nowhere else to go. And then I was kind of quite content that I've done my best. I have my Under 23 medal, I have my student university medal, so that's enough for me.
Mm.
yeah, but then obviously the life had other plans.
Yeah, and how had you viewed your life then when you got to the point where you were content with the medals that you had won? You know, had you planned out what everything else was going to look like, or were you just excited to see what new opportunities came along?
Yeah, it was more like, I met my husband then as well, and it was more like building family life now. We were working, and not long after we got married, we moved here. So it was just like, plan was to stay here for 1 year and then, you know, experience a different life and see what we can do here and learn the language a little bit more and then go back. But again, life had different plans. I never ever thought I'll go back to rowing. So it was kind of like happy out, you know, ready for all that family bliss that comes and kids and everything.
Well, you managed to do both in the end, but
yeah.
What was the, I suppose, moment that you kind of realized, oh, I actually want to go back to rowing. I'm not finished with it yet.
It was our famous trip to the zoo. I think it was just one flick of a moment, and it was almost decided. We just missed the turn to the zoo. We drove straight to Island Bridge, and there's all the training was on the water. And so we saw all the boats. I was like, oh, we definitely have to come back. And I was like, what, 6 months pregnant at the time? So obviously had to wait until our second child was born, Daniela, and then I think it was about 5 weeks after that I was in a boat.
Wow, that's a quick turnaround.
Yeah,
after
and it was a coincidence as well, because Casper was working at the airport at the time, and one of his colleagues' son was in a commercial club, so we got contacts through him. So we organized everything before I even could go on the water. It was almost, called fate, called it whatever you want, but it was just that one day, and that was it.
What was that feeling like, stepping back into a boat after so long of not being in it, you know? Was there muscle memory there? Did it feel a little uncomfortable?
There was definitely muscle memory there, but at the same time, we look back at the videos and I was like, oh my God.
Form out the window.
yeah. No, it's like you can definitely see the different style of rowing over there and the dress code as well. But yeah, it was fun. It was like my quiet time on the water. And we have some pictures where Casper is on a bank with kids in a buggy, and like we had Patrick, he was one, and Daniela was just a newborn, so he was there walking around with his flask of warm food and bottles ready while I was on a border trying to relax, I suppose.
And you say like that was kind of your quiet time and time for you to relax, so when you went back it was purely just recreational, maybe keep your fitness up a little bit,
for about a couple of weeks. Yeah, that was actually crazy, because then soon after, I think I started off probably February, and then in March I tried my first 2K on a rowing machine, and I was like about 15 seconds off my PB, and I was delighted. It was like for my standards now, that was a really bad score, but I was like, oh my God, I'm not that far off. So, and then the seed was planted that I need to go to London, and that was it.
That's insane. And would you have kept up like exercise and fitness in general during your pregnancies and even just in the time between finishing up rowing or starting up again in Ireland?
I think we tried, but life kind of gets in the way.
Yeah,
not really. Because I think 1 week after being here in Ireland, we discovered that I'm pregnant. So it was like, oh, sure, I don't need exercise anymore.
Yeah.
I wasn't really.
Yeah.
I was quite big.
No, I was just thinking if you went from, you know, getting back into it, only being 15 seconds, as you say, off your PB, which when you're competing at elite is a lot, but when you're going from two pregnancies, surely there must be some sort of exercise in between, but clearly your
running
body...
Running off a toddler?
Yeah. I mean, that...
I suppose.
I think any parent listening into this would say that 100% counts. Yeah, do at least
definitely.
5K a day.
Pacing the streets with a boogie.
Yeah.
Picking up things from the floor 150 times a day, if not more. Like, all that counts.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Shopping bags.
And how many hands you have to carry different things in
as well.
Yeah,
I had a toddler on my hip and then a big bump at the front and then a shopping bag in the other one. So, yeah, that probably was the exercise.
Yeah, no, that definitely would count. And so that's a very quick turnaround to suddenly start focusing on an Olympics and a Olympic cycle. Was there anyone around you at the time that was kind of encouraging you towards it, or was it just something in your head that you said, this is what I want and this is what I'm going to do?
I think it was kind of Casper and my husband as well. Like, two of us crazy people decided, well, we have two small kids, let's just go to Olympics. It was kind of, I don't know, I remember running around. We lived in Skerries at the time, running around, trying to get back to the fitness and stuff, and dreaming about, like, seeing my name in the papers that I'm going to Olympics. And that was my motivation for the whole whatever I had then, 4 years. It was obsession, I think. Yeah.
And what did those 4 years look like for you in terms of the training? Because at the time you were the sole rower that went, which is kind of mad in the context of where we are now. And as I said at the start, what rowing is seen as in this country, you know, in terms of, was it a lonely journey, or was it, I know you talked a lot about Casper and the support you had from there, but in terms of, I suppose, people who were going through the exact same thing or similar things.
It wasn't lonely at all. I joined a club where I was kind of boosted by pretty kind of stubborn women who knew what they wanted, and I just tagged along at first. I knew what I wanted, so we're kind of pushing each other along, and we went racing. We're here and training in Island Bridge at like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, driving to Blessington. It was a bit of a drive, but had to be done, and we had like a nice group of training here, and we kind of just, I don't know, worked together. We might had same goals at some point, but then goals got maybe a small bit different, but we still worked together. We kind of supported each other in a way. and we raced Henley. That was fun. We raced champs at home. That was fun. I almost feel it got a bit lonelier once I joined the national team. At some points during my career, it was like three people training at the National Rowing Centre. So that was much lonelier than the time I spent here in Dublin. And the community as well, like, it was so supportive. Like, never felt alone.
It's amazing to have that group of women kind of pushing each other despite maybe different targets at the end. Yeah. Everyone just wanting to achieve their best, and that's exactly what everyone was pushing for.
Yeah. Like, one of them, they were all working. So they'll be doing early sessions in the morning, then rushing off to work. And then on weekends, we spend half a day in Blessington training. And then I had to work on Saturdays as well. I remember rushing home, grabbing toast and off to work. It was busy, but I don't know, I enjoyed it. I had so much motivation at that point that nothing was an issue.
Mm.
Yeah, it's great. Nice, fun memories of all those days. Yeah.
And so then you make it to London. As I said, the only rower there from Ireland. What's going through your head, you know?
Well,
the weight of a country on your shoulders. And also, I suppose, a massive international stage to represent rowing in general in Ireland and show people, especially women and girls, that this is a sport and this is a pathway that you can pursue.
Yeah, it was. Qualifying for London was very stressful because obviously I had dreams the size of the, I don't know what, but the ability, it was there, but it wasn't quite the level. I had a physiology, but technique wasn't quite there. I was just kind of, you know, coming back after kids, got a bit stronger, so I was a bit rough maybe with the boat or something. The will was there to go, but I wasn't quite ready to perform maybe to the highest standards mentally, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe I just didn't think I can. So again, back to qualification, it was really tough because qualification for Olympics for rowing was introduced in 1996. So since then, there has been no female rower at the Olympics for Ireland. So that was a big, big wall to break down, I think, to qualify. And especially in a single, I think single in general is a really hard boat.
Mm-hmm.
You have no teammates. Like, if you're nervous, you're nervous on your own. So the qualify, I think I qualified against all the odds in London because on a paper I should have been around fifth. Like, I know you can't count the results, but you can to a certain extent. And on the last few days they added the fourth spot to Olympics. I think there was no takers from the GB squad, so they added that single spot to the general pool. And that meant that I have to finish top four at the qualifying regatta, and I was about fifth. So I remember that day, Casper and kids arrived to the venue. It's called the Regatta of Death. And so they arrived to the venue, and I hadn't seen him for like 3 weeks. So it was great to see them, but I had to get away from them because I couldn't, my tension was like building up and I couldn't just stay still. So I had to go back to hotel room, and my race was in the evening. So I was like, oh my God, how long this day is going to be. So basically I went out crazy and just kept going. And me and my coach Adrian, we had like a kind of plan. If I have to sprint, I sprint from 500, so I flipped the sprint. Instead of sprinting the last 250, I started my last 250, sprint 500 to go. So start sprinting there and hang on for your dear life. So that's exactly what I did. And if I hadn't done that, I probably wouldn't have qualified because the girl was catching me. So I think that was kind of going against all the odds. And it was like at that point for me, that was big to qualify for London. That was such a massive like weight off my shoulders because we did sacrifice so much for it as a family. So it's not a sacrifice anymore. We had to move to Cork. We obviously love it now. We love it over there. But it was a big change for everyone. And yeah, it was a massive relief to go. Before London itself, I unfortunately got a bit of food poisoning. So the preparation wasn't ideal. But I think I did my best considering the circumstances of late qualifying, the massive emotional calm down after qualification as well. I knew I can be fast, but I think might have overthought some races and stuff. But I think we did our best considering everything.
This week on Diverted, it's the series finale, Argentina Part 2. It's been emotional, but my hitchhiking journey finally comes to an end, and I finally, kind of, come to terms with the fact that I missed out on the Buenos Aires celebrations after the 2022 World Cup.
A lot of people who I haven't seen since the World Cup would just greet you with, "We won the World Cup." Yeah. It's like, instead of hello, you go, "Hey, we won the World Cup."
We'll also be speaking to people in the Welsh regions of Patagonia.
When the Welsh came to Patagonia, it was so important to them to maintain their culture, their language, their religion, and their way of living life.
And we will visit Newell's Old Boys, the club that connects both Maradona and Messi in Rosario.
Bueno, ese equipo, 74, 88, 1988, 90, 91, 92, 2004, 2003. Mm-hmm. Esas son todas las estrellas que tienen.
Diverted. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. On Off the Ball.
London.
I was going to ask what that experience is like of obviously being so pent up and ready for qualification, and then suddenly having to switch your mindset of, oh, I've actually done it, but haven't almost even competed in the biggest race yet, but the qualification felt like the biggest race.
For me, that was the biggest race. Qualification was the biggest one. I think if I wouldn't have qualified for London, I wouldn't have continued with rowing, because it was just taking too much, and if there was no result for that work, then I don't think it would be okay with me going. But yeah, it was massive at that point. Obviously, considering how rowing has developed now, if I did the same achievement now, it would be blown out of proportion. But at that time, it was so quiet. Mm. I was like, I felt I've achieved a huge thing, and there was not much about it. Like, it was like, oh, okay, well, I'm still going to Olympics. Yeah, and I really enjoyed that Olympics because I appreciated how much it took to actually get there. Getting the kit, it was like best day ever, like, you know, and having kids there sitting on the stands eating like Pringles and having their little Go Mammy t-shirts, and the crowd in general in London was amazing. It was probably my favorite Olympics.
I assume the kids were probably a bit too young at that stage to really understand what was going on.
Yeah, but they'll have
But
pictures.
Still enjoy the experience, of course.
They enjoy the Pringles and all the snacks, and they got new bikes over there as well. So
sounds like a dream.
Yeah, I know.
Forget the potential Olympic medals. That is truly what you want from a situation like that. And so you make it to London, not exactly the experience you want it to be, but still have that massive pride of getting the qualification in the first place. And you said there that if you hadn't have qualified, there was a potential, or there was a question mark in your head whether you'd continue rowing. Was that totally blown out of the water was that totally gone after you made it to London, and was another Olympics straight on your side?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was, I took 4 weeks off, so I did very little. And then I came back with a purpose of getting a medal in Rio. How funny. Nothing worked out. I think I was too keen, so I threw myself into training. All was fine up until the point when I didn't have coach for a couple months. So then I think I was getting sick a lot. I obviously was under eating that I didn't know at the time, and overtraining, and I dug myself a hole, so I didn't really compete in 2013. So I had to skip the season because I had no one monitoring me. But then recovered slowly, all good. But yeah, the idea was to go to Rio and fight for the medal.
Mm. And that didn't happen, unfortunately, for you in that race. What, with the highs of getting to London and then having Rio not go the way you wanted, how did you deal with that at the time, in that you were obviously, you had, it's still an incredible achievement to qualify for your second Olympics in a row. But obviously, I assume there was a lot more disappointment around this one than there was London, because London had the novelty of being the first and breaking that barrier. How did you deal with that at the time?
Oh, I was heartbroken. Not just me, the family. Kids obviously were fine. But it was really hard, because I was a little bit unlucky. Again,
Because if you've been in any of the other heats, you would have qualified.
Yeah, if the system would be like now, they've changed, they took the repassages out, so there's no second chance, you only judge on time. I would have been fine, but it wasn't. I just had such a tough quarterfinal where basically most of the girls that we had at the last final qualifier, which I had to go again, we ended up, myself, Belarusian and Australian, who was a world champion, and who else was there?
There was Jingli Duan as well, the Chinese racer, who was world bronze at the World Championships.
Yeah, so they were all like people with big names, and there's me trying to chase my dreams, and mother of two who made her debut at the Olympics at 30, okay? And then, if I backed myself up a little bit more, I could have made it through, but I think mentally that was too much after last qualifier, because it seemed like, oh, this is the last qualification all over again. Like, if I don't make it, I'm out. So yeah, it wasn't great. It wasn't a great experience, but it was nice to be there. It was nice to see like a historic moments, like boys getting medal, which sent rowing absolutely through the roof. It was just sad that I couldn't experience that.
How did you look at that at the time? Like, was there any bit of you that was saying, that should be me up there, or, you know, I should be getting the recognition for developing the sport to a place where it did go a bit stratospheric in an Irish context whenever the lads won a medal? You know, we were all very excited.
Yeah, like, you kind of almost, you know, you've been part of the same group and you've done the same work, but then you're almost like watching from the sidelines. You're happy for them no matter what, but then you're incredibly sad for yourself. And sometimes it's really hard to hide or really hard to overcome. So you kind of do your best to deal with it. And then obviously, like, the disappointment, you don't want to stick your head into the sand for a whole time as well. And I think as athletes, you have almost like a skill to find a way to deal with stuff. So you figure it out, you figure out what's going to make you feel better. You find a lot of excuses why it didn't go your way, okay? Or you just, I don't know, bury your head in the sand. Or try to fix it. Like I tried again going to Tokyo.
And what was the thought process then? Was it that you felt like you've been close to, if you hadn't had, I suppose, that mental side where you maybe didn't back yourself enough, and that year that you lost out as well when you didn't have the coach and you felt like you overdid it in certain areas, was that like, I need to prove to myself that I can go again and I can do it again? Was that the thought process behind it?
Something like that, yeah. You're almost like, oh, I can't finish my career like this. I need to go again and fix it. So it was like almost need, first, I can do better. Second, you feel like you haven't reached your potential yet. And then fixing it is like the thing.
And then that was another difficult Olympics for you as well. there a part of you after the two of them asking almost, you know, why me? Why? Because there was certain things that happened that were just outside of your control. You know, even earlier talking about getting the food poisoning or, you know, there was just different things that there was nothing you really could have done to protect against them. Getting sick in Tokyo as well.
Tokyo was a bit different. That's kind of, I could have done something, but I was fool enough not to. Tokyo was almost more heartbreaking because I could have done things differently, but I was not allowed. And it was more heartbreaking because I thought I was let down by a lot of people who were coaching me, giving me a program, minding me. Because, like, I was on a winning streak for a few years, and then suddenly I go from being the fastest to the slowest. So obviously something was wrong because I was doing exactly the same training. That was very different, and it hurt more because everything was, the things that I was flagging off, the concerns that I had, was all brushed under the carpet. I was not listened to as well, not taken seriously almost. It was almost like the experience I had over 20 years rowing, it was not important, it meant nothing. So that was, yeah, I'm still dealing with the consequences of Tokyo and the last year as well. So.
That must have been incredibly difficult to deal with while also competing at an elite level and trying to perform and be your best every single day. And then also going home and having to be a mother as well.
Yeah, there were points when I couldn't do anything. I couldn't be a mother, normal mother, like who would support their kids. I'd have very short fuse or non-existent fuse. Everything would send me over the edge. Didn't want to get up out of bed in the morning because you just feel so broken from everything. You just want to crawl away somewhere and hide until it's all over. But at the same time, you still want to fight for your seat. You still want to be there. You don't want to miss out on anything. And you, it's basically you end up being in a space where you feel like stepping away from sport would be good for my head, but also it wouldn't be at the same time. Yeah, so the last years after Tokyo up until like now, it's been quite difficult.
And but, how have you balanced that journey, I suppose? Because as you said, you've also hung up rowing, as in you're not doing it anymore in a competitive, but you are coaching. Has the coaching helped bring a bit of love back to it or helped heal the relationship, I suppose, with the sports? Even though it wasn't the sport that was doing or making you feel that way, it was a lot of the systems and everything else in and around it. I assume there was a bit of resentment towards the sport itself as well.
Not towards the sport, actually. I still love rowing. I'll get out on a boat any day if I can, and I'll absolutely enjoy it. It was more the system. Like, it squashes you down sometimes, and I know rowing is not the only one. Unfortunately, that's quite common these days, and I think it just needs to change. There needs to be more protection for the athletes out there, and more consideration that that's almost for athlete, that's the job you're doing. And you should be treated like you are an employee, not like you are there just to do what you're told and not to be listened to.
And I also, part of that, I assume, comes as well with knowing your own body, knowing its limitations, knowing, you know, the days where maybe you have a training plan in place, but it's just not the right day to do that training plan.
So the easy way to explain it is, imagine you are doing your work in a less amount of time, but all your KPIs are much better than the other people's, but you're still not being considered for promotion. So I think everyone would find that very annoying. And like, it's just wrong.
Very frustrating.
That's quite a general way to explaining it. So I think that was, because if you stand up for yourself, you're going to be disliked. If you voice your opinions, you're going to be disliked. And if you're disliked, you're pushed aside, unfortunately.
And so how do you reflect on those three different Olympics now? Because in between, there was a massive amount of success for you. And also, again, you were doing it as an older athlete. You were doing it as someone who had had two children, which is, you know, it is a toll on your body to be pregnant and to go through that whole process. How do you reflect on that time now? Are you still too close to the Tokyo experience, I suppose, and the end part of your career to be able to reflect on what a natural, incredible achievement it all was?
I think for me, the saving grace is, let's say, world medals and European medals that I have. There's decent enough collection at home so I can look back and say, okay, it was worth something. Going to Olympics, I know it's huge honor to go to Olympics and represent your country, and I fully appreciate that. I'm proud that I've gone there, and I know it's only 10,000 people from the whole world make it. So I've been there three times, but I feel the last two times I didn't reach my potential 100%, and that's disappointing because, yeah, it's just, I remember when girls won their medal in the four, I was so happy for them. But also I was holding, Afrik was sitting beside me, I was holding her medal, and I was like holding back tears because I wanted one as well, and I knew I won't get it because I knew I was in trouble. They won the medal and I had to go for my semi-final the next day, and I already knew that it's not going to happen. That was hard. And I knew that nobody believed me that I'm not well. So that was extra hard.
Yeah, that's an incredibly difficult experience, especially if you do want to be there for your team, like Ireland teammates, and you want to support them and you want to celebrate them, but then you're going through something totally different internally.
Yeah, and I think, but you also, when you do well, it's, and your teammates do well, it's out of this world. Like, it's so amazing. There was a World Cup we went to 2002, where I was injured for most of the year, so I didn't even know if I'm going to row that year. And then we jumped in double, we went off, and in the first outing we won silver medal. The whole team, all the girls won medals. Amazing. I think, and Gary was there as well, single. So we all won medals. It was amazing to go home, like bling everywhere, like everyone's hyped up. It was so great.
Mm.
Yeah.
And can, now that your kids are a little bit older, can they appreciate everything that you've done, or is it still just like, that's just mom and what she does?
I don't actually know. They don't really say, well, actually, Patrick has said, after I didn't qualify for Paris, both of them actually, Patrick and Danielle as well, they were saying like, look, you've been to 3 Olympics, you've done so good, you have like world championships, medals at home, and like, you've done so good already, like, you shouldn't be upset. So that was kind of very nice of to hear from them. So yeah, they definitely appreciate it, I think. But I don't know if they care enough to, I don't know.
Yeah.
I should ask them properly.
You should, and you can let me know. You can send me a text and be like, this is what they
actually do. Give my homework, write an essay.
Yeah. Were you able to watch Paris?
No. I threw myself into work, digging gardens, digging holes, making flower beds, or we went to Latvia for holidays just for that reason. So we, off the telly, couldn't watch it. I don't think I'll be able to watch the next Olympics either.
Do you think that do you think for the rest of your life it'll just be too difficult?
Hopefully not. It just, when you know the ending you got was not the one you deserved, it's really hard to actually get your head around it.
Mm.
That's, in all the years I've been doing sport, I never imagined I'm going to leave so heartbroken and so upset with the system, with the people who are supposed to look after you, and that's probably the hardest thing.
Mm.
But hopefully in a while it all will fade away and be a bit easier to watch.
And is there any part of you that would like to, now you're doing some coaching, to get back to that elite system, but as a coach? Or is it still too close to your own career to even be thinking about that? Is it more just, you know, getting a bit of the enjoyment back, I suppose?
Yeah, I think that's priority, get enjoyment back. And I love coaching. I don't know if I'm good at it, but I absolutely love it. When I go on a walk, I don't even know what I'm saying, but there's always something comes out. I love getting in a boat with someone and try to teach them like what I know. And what I know is not a huge amount, but it's also not nothing.
Mm.
There might be some small bits that people don't realize you need to feel in a boat that makes you a few seconds faster. I love that. Daniela, she's picked up rowing, so I get out in a boat with her sometimes. So that's really fun. She's very strong. And maybe at some point I would love to go high-performance coaching, but at the moment I feel like something fundamentally needs to change to actually, for me to be able to go back there and do something.
And you've mentioned a couple of different times about, you know, maybe there were points where it was hard to balance everything, including having kids, and we're seeing it's becoming a bit more normalized for women to compete at elite levels and also have either go through pregnancy or have kids, which is absolutely brilliant, because I think anyone who has ever been pregnant will know you are a superhuman to go through that entire experience, and
no,
it doesn't
really
limit.
Like, guess how many moms were on a podium in a doubles goal at the Olympics?
How many?
3.
Mm.
Half, 50% of them were mothers. And the ones that were on the highest podium, both were mothers with little toddlers.
That's brilliant.
Babies, yeah.
And how do you feel about that? Because
I was delighted for them. Absolutely delighted. And even the girl in GB double as well, they came third. She just came back, I think, the same season, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
It just shows that they don't need to go on a six-week camp to be good. Mm. You can still be with your kids in your pre-Olympic camp and do well, because that's what they did, the ones who won the gold.
Yeah, and you do see a lot more elite setups organising themselves so that kids can be involved. We saw it, say, even here with the Irish soccer team, Julianne Russell had her little girl in with her at camp. And if anything, it actually brought a bit of life, it felt like, to the team around her. Because I imagine when you're so focused on something and there's very little light relief in those camp situations.
It distracts you.
Yeah, having a nice, cute, smiling tiny human there is probably helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And like in my career, I always try to keep family life and rowing like separate. So if they were to come in on a camp, at first it was a requirement, the family can't stay in the same hotel. Then I didn't quite ask anymore because I accepted that as a rule. So whenever they traveled over for camps, they always stayed somewhere else. So I'll go visit them for a day and then go back to my hotel and stuff. But it was not quite the same. Mm. So I kind of kept my family separate from the team. But then I see, let's say, New Zealand team, they almost embrace everyone. Like, you know, all the sculling team, basically, well, the double and the single, they're all mothers. And they support each other. They know what they're going through. They definitely tailor program to themselves. They know what's best for them. Let's say, oh, babies didn't have a good night's sleep. Can we do pieces in the evening? I'm sure there's no issue with that. Mm. So they're more adaptable, and the success is evident. Like, you can see how well they're doing.
And was, as you, like, you had that great example about the podium this year, but like, was it as normalized when you were starting out? Like, what were there people kind of questioning you, saying, why do you think you can do this after going through?
No one was questioning, but it wasn't as maybe supported. Mm. I don't know. Like, obviously, no one ever said, no, your kids can't go to the camp. We just never had funds to go to the long camps with kids, with a whole family. But it's just that rule, like, they can't stay there, or you only can see them for an hour, maybe, or two, and then you have to go back. There was never, like, allowances that, oh, you can stay with them and just train from there. Or let's say going on a camps, I knew, let's say before Tokyo, we were away for like 6 or 7 weeks. And being a mom, that's extremely hard. Like, I miss them so much. Like, at the end in Tokyo, all I want is to go home and see them. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of it was because of the COVID, they couldn't go to the camp and visit. But if we were training from home, it would have been much easier. So yeah, it's just things like that. And that was difficult.
Mm. Well, it is brilliant that it's more normalized now and that setups are better for it, because I do think it, I mean, like, obviously people will have different preferences when it comes to these things. Sometimes you might need that headspace, but I would say by and large, most people would want that access to their family and access to...
Yeah, and it gives you a boost. Mm. Like, you don't feel like you're missing out on anything. You see your biggest supporters right there with you. Mm. And you feel like it's a normal life. Sometimes camp life can be so overwhelming if you spend there for too much time. You want your normality. You want to feel like it's your normal day, normal life. Instead of, let's say, if you go to compete from the camp straight to the championships, it all feels very dragged out, and you do get homesick at the end, no matter what. You can't wait to go home. As if you would go compete from home, you still keep that energy for the whole duration of the competition because you're not worn out from being away from home. Mm. There's, like, we all love our own beds, to be honest.
I think even if you're going on holiday for 2 weeks, there's still something very nice about getting back to your own bed, never mind 6 or 7 week training camps. Sunita, thank you very much. It's been really interesting. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you.
Settle In is brought to you by Guinness 00. Tune in for another brilliant episode coming your way very, very soon.
Settle In on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 00.